Hey folks, if you haven't tried Audible yet, what are you waiting on? You've heard me talk about it for a while now. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to mysteries and thrillers, true crime and more. Audible is the home of storytelling. You'll discover thousands of podcasts from popular favorites to exclusive new series. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. But members also get full access to a growing selection of included audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts, and you can download or stream those included titles all you want. And the Audible app is great. Makes it very easy to listen anytime, anywhere, whether you're traveling, working out, walking the dog, or just doing your chores. Right now, I'm listening to a thriller titled Then She Was Gone by Lisa Jewell. It's absolutely amazing. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TCAT or text TCAT to 500-500. That's audible.com/TCATT or text TCAT to 500-500. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 257 of the True Crime All the Time podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, what's going on with you?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing very well.
Good.
We have got a lot going on this weekend.
We do.
We have this episode that we're about ready to do. We have an episode out right now on True Crime All the Time Unsolved. It's on the disappearance of Brian Schaefer in our home state of Ohio.
Yeah, we're headed down to Columbus. It's an interesting disappearance case. It happens down right by the university, so we'll dive into that and cover some of the good details.
We also just put out on Saturday night a brand new Patreon-only episode on Brandon Clark and the murder of Bianca Devin.
It was a very shocking episode.
It was, you know, it's pretty recent. It only occurred a couple of years ago. And kind of the whole thing played out over social media.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a very fascinating aspect to that case. Gibbs, let's go ahead and give our shout outs. For Patreon, we had Tracy Drago.
Hey, Tracy.
Dylan Stayback.
Hey, thanks, Stayback.
Sonia jumped out at our highest level.
Appreciate that, Sonia.
Ashley Schiffbauer.
What's going on, Schiffbauer?
Sean Eagles.
Hey, Sean.
Nancy Bishop.
Appreciate that, Nancy.
Gary Watkins.
Hey, Gary.
Becky Mueling jumped out at our highest level.
Well, thank you, Mueling.
Adelaide LeBlonde.
Well, thank you, LeBlonde.
Laura Dumond.
Oh, yeah, a couple French names in a row. Dumond.
Emily Firth.
What's going on, Emily?
William Haas.
Hey, Haas.
Will Haas.
What's going on, Will?
Kendra Holly.
Hey, Kendra.
Sam Rozier.
What's going on, Rozier?
And last but not least, Danielle Wade.
Well, thank you, Wade.
So we appreciate all that new support. And then if we go back into the vault, Gibbs, this week we selected Natalie Webb.
There you go, Natalie.
So we appreciate all the continued support. We had PayPal donations from Tessie Redding.
Hey, Tessie.
Lauren Porter.
There's Lauren.
And a donation to give a happy birthday shout out to Kimberly Vasquez.
Well, happy birthday, Kimberly.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate all that support as well. All right, Gibbs, are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time?
I'm ready.
We are talking about Todd Kohlhepp, one of South Carolina's most notorious serial killers. You know, to be honest with you, this is a person that people have been asking us to do an episode on for years and years and years. Todd is currently serving a life sentence in prison for killing seven people. A 32-year-old man from Anderson, South Carolina, a couple from Spartanburg, South Carolina, and four people at a motorcycle shop in Chesney, South Carolina. He also has rape and kidnapping charges for two additional victims. Kohlhepp exhibited angry and aggressive behavior from the time that he was a toddler. At the age of 15, he committed an act of extreme sexual violence. When he finally got out of prison, he hid his true self behind the image of a friendly realtor. But as with many people that we profile, Gibbs, he just couldn't control his violent temper and his urge to kill. Now, I will say the majority of the information and the quotes in this case come from the Greenville News, a South Carolina newspaper that provided amazing, very extensive coverage on the Todd Kohlhepp case. Todd Christopher Kohlhepp was born on March 7th, 1971, to parents William Samsell and Regina Tay. He was born in Florida, but grew up in South Carolina in Georgia. Todd was an only child.
Like yourself?
Like myself. His parents divorced when he was a toddler, like myself. And his mother remarried when he was just 3 years old. Todd went 8 years without seeing his biological father. Both of his parents later wrote to probation officers that he had anger issues from a very young age.
Well, he's pretty cruel to other kids.
He was. He put bleach in the goldfish bowl because his parents refused to buy him a gerbil.
Pretty spiteful.
At one point, he was dismissed from the Boy Scouts because he was deemed to be too disruptive. And he often destroyed his own possessions, as well as other children's projects and gifts that he received from other people. Todd's father wrote that the only emotion he knew how to express was anger.
Yeah, it shows right there.
In 1980, Todd was referred to the Behavior Evaluation Center at the Georgia Mental Health Institute because of his mother's inability to enforce limits and because of his behavior problems in school. It's not known exactly how long he stayed at the Mental Health Institute or if it had any effect on his behavior. What is known is that in Todd's early sessions at the Behavior Center, he was preoccupied with sex. The therapist described him as intelligent, but someone who had low motivation, poor self-esteem, and antisocial personality characteristics. One report read, "Behaviorally, he is demanding, self-centered, and likely attempts to force others to do what he wants in order to meet his own needs."
That says a lot.
Yeah, I think all of this says a lot. Right. So he ends up at this institute at the age of 9, where they're saying he's preoccupied with sex. Now, when you get into the area of being self-centered, forcing others to do what you want them to do in order to satisfy your own needs.
Yeah.
Okay. There are a lot of people that are manipulative, narcissistic. It doesn't mean that they hurt anyone. They just use those tactics to get what they want. But Gibbs, we know that a lot of serial killers exhibit these same types of behaviors, but obviously the results are deadly.
Yeah, they go to a different level.
Yeah. Court records indicate Todd Kohlhepp was a disturbed teen. He once threatened to kill his mother, destroyed his newly renovated bedroom with a hammer, and locked a boy in a dog cage.
Even one of his neighbors described him as a devil on a chain.
Okay, pretty descriptive. But no doubt, right, this was a kid who had explosive anger issues. I don't know that he had a very robust family support system. But maybe even more importantly, this is a kid who just had no remorse for the things that he did to other people.
Yeah, he didn't care about the actions that he took.
Todd told his mother that he wanted to live with his father. Okay, kids do that.
Sure they do.
Right? In a divorce situation, Todd took it a little different route. He told his mother that this was going to happen. And if he had to kill her to go, then that's what he was going to do. Todd hated his stepfather. And I really couldn't figure out why. There wasn't a lot in the research about it. But he definitely did not want to live with him. So Todd left Spartanburg, South Carolina, and moved to Tempe, Arizona in 1984. So he's about 13 years old here.
Right.
On November 25th, 1986, 15-year-old Todd used his father's handgun to force a 14-year-old girl to enter his home. He tied this girl's hands and raped her in his bedroom. Now, he was arrested that same day. He informed the police that the gun didn't work, so he used a knife to threaten the girl.
To get his way.
Oh, absolutely right. I mean, we are going back to what was documented many years earlier. Right. Demanding, self-centered. He's going to do whatever he has to do to other people to meet his own needs. And he's preoccupied with sex.
Yeah.
So is it any shock that one need that he would try to meet would be sexual in nature? To me, it's not at all.
Yeah, it's not shocking to me. I mean, even his probation officer asked him, why did you do that? And he said he just wasn't really sure. But maybe it was an act in rebellion because his father was out of town. I think it's a weird way to rebel, though.
Well, normally when you think of someone rebelling, right, they're doing something that might hurt themselves. They're doing something to hurt their parents, right? They're doing something to hurt whoever they're rebelling against. Todd did say that he was angry with this girl because apparently she had a crush on some of his friends, but not on him. And when asked how he thought his actions affected the girl, he only said, I have messed myself up too.
Yeah, see, again, he's only thinking about himself.
Has not even the slightest care about how this girl felt, about, you know, what he might have done to her long term. Only said, well, you know, I hurt myself. He told the probation officer he knew what he did was wrong, but he thought the girl was 16 at the time. So break down that statement. 14, 16, you still forced a girl into your home.
Yeah.
Under threat of violence. You still raped this girl.
Right.
No matter how old you thought she was. You know, to me, that's just, it's kind of nonsensical.
Yeah. It's the act that you did. That was what was wrong.
Todd pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 15 years in prison. He was also required to register as a sex offender. Okay. What he did was horrible. But I will be honest, Gibbs, in saying a 15-year sentence at the age of 15 is very punitive in my eyes compared to what we have seen. We're talking the 1980s here.
We are.
This is a pretty healthy sentence compared to what we have seen in many other cases. But Todd obviously wasn't happy about it. He thought that a 15-year sentence was unfair. He wanted a 12-year or less sentence because he had aspirations of getting a job later with the military. Todd's mother wrote to the police saying that, yes, what her son did was wrong, but he was, quote, not a bad boy. She pointed out the fact that he walked the girl home afterwards and asked the question, does that sound like a dangerous criminal?
How can you make a statement like that thinking that he's not dangerous just because he sexually assaulted her and then walked her home? Maybe he walked her home to make sure she didn't go to the police right away. You don't know why he walked her home, but he's not a good boy. Good boys don't do things like that.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. But here's a mother, right, trying to keep her son out of a long prison sentence. I get it. But at the same time, if you're walking down the street and I come up to you and beat you within an inch of your life, but then I help you up at the end of it, does that make it better that I almost killed you?
No.
No, it really doesn't.
Sorry, man, about killed you there. You know.
Let me help you get to your feet. I know you're at death's door, but the least I can do is help you up. I think it's just a mother trying anything that she can do to keep her son out of prison.
Right.
On March 27th, 1987, Todd told a psychologist he felt negatively about himself. He considered himself a bad person because he felt like he could hurt people. He said he often asked himself, why do I do things like this?
Well, it wasn't the fact that he could hurt people. He did hurt people.
Yeah. And I don't know if he was maybe talking about future actions. thoughts, right? He was having negative thoughts. He was having thoughts about hurting people. I do think it's somewhat introspective to ask the question, you know, why am I thinking this? Why do I do things like this? Now, he could also be a master manipulator and be working this psychologist, because we know a lot of people do. In October 1987, Todd was transferred from a juvenile facility to an adult Arizona prison to serve his sentence. While in prison, he graduated from Central Arizona College with a bachelor's degree in computer science. So he really wasn't, Gibbs, in this juvenile facility very long.
He really wasn't.
He was in an adult prison, I think, by the age of 16, which I found that a little odd.
That make a man out of you pretty quick.
Oh, that's rough, man. You think about a 16-year-old going into the lion's den with all these very, you know, hardened criminals in their late 20s, 30s, and 40s. Now, what he did was horrible, no doubt about it. I guess I was thinking they would keep him in a juvenile facility until he was 18 and then ship him off, but I guess not. In August 2001, Todd was released from prison. So he served, what, 15 years?
Yeah.
He moved back to South Carolina and lived at the Hunt Club Apartments in Spartanburg. In January of 2002, he began working as a graphic designer for Seven Sons and Company in Spartanburg. He worked there until November 2003. In 2002, Todd Kohlhepp began a 10-year relationship with a woman named Holly Udy. Holly claims that she had no knowledge of any of his crimes. She told the Greenville News, "He knew how to feed on my emotions whenever I was having problems with life." In 2017, she told Inside Edition, "There was always something that sat uneasy with me about him, and I just really couldn't put my finger on it." You know, ultimately, Gibbs, Holly Udy helped Kohlhepp purchase a shipping container that he would later use to kidnap two of his victims.
And Kohlhepp claims he told Holly about some of the murders, but of course, you know, Holly denies it.
Yeah, she has said that he talked about some of his cases in a general sense, but never, you know, confessed to any crime.
I'd be curious to hear what some of those conversations were.
Yeah, I would too. And I don't want to cast any aspersions on her, but is she, after the fact, trying to maybe minimize what she knew just so that she doesn't look bad in people's eyes? I mean,
be the smart thing to do.
That could very well be possible. I think people do that a lot of times. Although I don't know that there's any reason for people to look badly upon her. You know, if you don't participate in any of the crimes, if you don't know about any of them ahead of time or afterwards, then,
right,
you know, the fact that you had a relationship with a killer, where there have been many people who that has happened to, obviously later they found out that their significant other was a killer and they had no idea. In May 2006, Todd applied to take the South Carolina real estate exam. He was required to explain his kidnapping conviction, but he failed to mention that he raped a girl and that he was a registered sex offender. And I think the problem, Gibbs, was that back in 2006, South Carolina law didn't require full background checks on realtors.
Yeah, I'm still confused how a felon was able to receive his license. But back then, maybe that wasn't an issue.
Yeah, the law changed in 2015, but Kohlhepp was grandfathered in with the old system. So on June 30th, 2006, he passed the exam and became a licensed real estate agent. And he started TKA Real Estate. So it's one of the reasons why I ultimately knew we were going to do this case. You know, you were a realtor.
I was.
At one point in your life. You and I have both worked in the real estate industry for a number of years. And we've worked with many, many real estate agents.
Oh,
over the last, what, 12, 13, 14 years.
Hundreds.
In January 2007, Kohlhepp purchased a home in Moore, South Carolina. In 2008, he graduated from the University of South Carolina upstate with a Bachelor of Science in Business Administration, Marketing.
So now he's got 2 degrees.
Pretty accomplished.
Yeah.
For somebody that spent the majority of their life so far in prison. In May 2014, Kohlhepp purchased a 95-acre property near Woodruff, South Carolina. And it was on this property that he would kill and bury 3 of his victims. 95 acres is a pretty good piece of property.
I think both you and I would love to have 95 acres.
Yeah, I actually would. I'd love to have a big, you know, parcel of land. I don't know that I ever will, but I'd like to. Todd was known for his love of guns. When he was later arrested, the police found 9mm handguns. They found silencers, assault rifles, and what was described, Gibbs, as an unbelievable amount of ammunition on his property. I think the big question that everybody asks is, how did Todd Kohlhepp get all these weapons? You just asked the question, how did he get his realtor's license being a felon? Well, how do you amass all of these weapons, this ammunition, as a felon?
Connections.
And this is the debate, right, that happens all the time. Todd never had a background check for a firearm purchase. As a convicted felon, he shouldn't have been able to purchase a gun. But we know there are ways for people to get guns without going through a background check. Family, friends, private sales, gun shows. There are ways. A man named Dustin Lawson was accused of buying and then supplying Kohlhepp with firearms. Dustin denied any knowledge of his crimes, but Kohlhepp told the authorities he had knowledge of the rape charge. So if that was true, just based on that, he should not have sold this man any guns.
Right. But again, it's hearsay, right?
Yeah, you're either going to believe the word of the man who's being accused of selling the guns or the word of a man who was convicted of rape and multiple murders. You got to make a choice on that one, I guess.
Right.
All right, Gibbs, let's take a break and talk about PROS. PROS makes custom hair care that's effective because it's personal. Using natural ingredients with proven results, PROS customizes every product in your routine from shampoo to supplements. First, PROS starts by asking about you as a person with their in-depth consultation. I had my wife take it. I watched her. They really go in depth. Then PROS analyzes all your answers and determines what unique blend of ingredients should be in every product of your custom routine. My wife ordered some shampoo, conditioner, and some supplements designed to increase her hair's volume. All their ingredients are sustainably sourced, ethically gathered, and cruelty-free. They're also the first custom beauty brand to go carbon neutral. If you're not 100% positive, PROS is the best hair care you've had. They will take the products back, no questions asked. PROS is the healthy hair regimen with your name all over. Take your free in-depth hair consultation and get 15% off your first order today. Go to pros.com/TCAT. That's PROSE.com/TCAT for your free in-depth hair consultation and 15% off. And next up is BetterHelp. We do routine maintenance all the time. We go to a mechanic for our cars. We go to the gym to work on our body. We do chores regularly. Not me, but some of us. Going to therapy is like all of the above. It's routine maintenance for your mental and emotional wellness to prevent bigger issues down the road. Going to therapy doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. It means you're investing in yourself to keep your mind healthy. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to, and you never have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room again. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. So why invest in everything else and not your mind? True Crime All the Time listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/TCAT. That's BetterHelp.com/TCAT. Kohlhepp was considered a pretty successful real estate agent, but some people said he had some strange behaviors. The Greenville News interviewed Roberta Shaughnessy, one of his clients. She remembers Todd as very outgoing and a great salesman, but said he was a little quirky, right? He made strange jokes. He talked a lot about guns, and he sprinkled sexual innuendos into their conversations. He talked about shooting guns to blow off steam and expressed anger at having to collect rent from what he called deadbeats. Yvonne Goodwin, an account executive of the Greenville News advertising department, had nothing positive to say about him. She and another employee ran display ads for his real estate business. She said he was not a nice guy. He pretty much yelled and cussed my teammate out over the phone when he would speak to her. He was just very condescending.
So he was a jerk.
Yeah, he was a jerk. And I think we would both admit that we know people like that. I've known a number of people like that during my life. Are they people that you want to go have a beer with? No.
No.
I'm not saying they're killers. They're just jerks. And, you know, I think that's a great word. It's a great way to put it. Jennifer Waddell was a home buyer who worked with Kohlhepp, and she described working with him as torture. She said he bragged about shooting people often enough that eventually she went to local authorities, but they told her they couldn't do anything unless she saw the guns. Okay. Gibbs, if you're a realtor, maybe not a great idea to turn off your clients with your behavior. First of all, why are you talking about shooting people anyway? But especially, why are you talking about it as you're doing this job that kind of relies on interpersonal skills, making relationships, things like that?
Versus scaring them, driving them away.
So it's kind of odd to me that he was considered a successful real estate agent, because everything you hear about this man is that he's odd, he's quirky, he really kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Maybe he just didn't get a lot of repeat business.
Well, I sure hope he didn't with that type of communication skills.
Well, there's no doubt, right? All of these people who had suspicions about Todd Kohlhepp, they turned out to be right. He hid his true self behind this image of a successful realtor. Todd Kohlhepp was a rapist and a serial killer. He murdered 7 people in 2003, 2015, and 2016. Scott Ponder, Brian Lucas, Beverly Guy, Chris Sherbert, Johnny Coxie, Megan Coxie, and Charles Charlie Carver. On August 29th, 2016, Claudia Joanne Shiflett, Charlie Carver's mother, received a one-word reply to her text message. This was the last communication that she received from her son. It was said that they were very close. They texted regularly. Joanne knew something was wrong. When Charlie failed to answer any more of her texts, she became even more worried when Charlie's girlfriend, Kayla Brown, didn't answer her phone. On August 30th, Leah Miller, Kayla Brown's friend, spoke to her over the phone. Kayla told her that she was driving home from Greenville. On the 31st, Leah received a text from Kayla at 6:06 a.m. Kayla asked, "Are you awake?" Leah answered a few hours later, but never received a response. On September 3rd, Claudia Shiflett reported Charlie missing. She told the police that she hadn't heard from her son in days and couldn't contact his girlfriend. A manager checked the apartment unit they lived in. It looked like no one had been there for some time. On September 5th, Leah Miller reported Kayla missing. She hadn't heard from her friend in several days. The manager checked the apartment again. He found that Kayla's car was still parked in their driveway, and her dog had been without food for a number of days.
That's alarming, because I'm pretty sure that she wouldn't have left her dog without food.
No, I would agree with you. I mean, 99% of dog owners treat their dogs like their kids. They love them so much. They're part of the family. The last thing in the world they would ever do is leave them for days without food and water. They just wouldn't do it. I think when you see that in any scenario, your mind automatically goes to, something's not right here. Yeah,
we got a problem.
Pet owners don't do that. Leah Miller told the police that Kayla worked for a man named Todd Kohlhepp. She cleaned some of his properties before he rented them out. She had a job lined up with him right before she disappeared. Kayla's Facebook and phone records were instrumental in helping investigators find her. Basically, Gibbs, they were able to put together a digital timeline going back to August 30th. The police spoke to Nicole Carver, Charlie's ex-wife, on September 6th. Charlie and Nicole got married in 2014. They separated in 2016, just a few months after he started dating Kayla. Nicole told the police that she looked on Charlie's laptop and believed that he and Kayla were in Myrtle Beach, about 5 hours away from Anderson, South Carolina. On September 7th, the police prepared and signed warrants to track cell phone records. They identified cell tower locations of the couple's last phone activity, but they couldn't get a precise location. On September 21st, Charlie's friend told the police she was receiving strange messages from him on Facebook. He asked for money for a drug that would help him stop using other drugs. She thought this was very unusual because Charlie didn't have a drug problem. And she wasn't the only person receiving messages from his Facebook account. He sent messages to other people stating that he and Kayla got married and that they were both doing okay. So you have these kind of strange Facebook messages coming in. You know, their families believe that these messages were fake. And so on September 23rd, the police executed search warrants for the Facebook records of Charlie, Nicole, and Kayla.
They obtained all their records by October 14th. So pretty fast.
Yeah, probably not as fast as you would like it, but I get it. There's a process involved. Nicole Carver continued telling the police that the couple were alive and well and communicating with herself and others. But as it turned out, Nicole discussed communications that occurred at times that just couldn't have been possible. And her statements cost the investigators valuable time. The police went all over the South to chase leads from Florida to North Carolina. Nicole told the police that she spoke to Charlie Carver on September 11th, 2016, they were angry that she didn't call them. According to Nicole, Charlie told her he was trying to buy tickets to Vero Beach, Florida. She said his car was in long-term parking at the Greenville-Spartanburg Airport. She told the police that Kayla had punched Charles hard enough to break six of his ribs. A few minutes later, she said Charlie decided to drive to a hospital in Myrtle Beach after he got hurt. He didn't want a paper trail of him being in Anderson or Greenville. But it turned out Charlie was in none of the places that Nicole mentioned. And I think Gibbs police were angry because they did spend a ton of time investigating some of these things that Nicole talked about when they later learned that they should have been focused on someone else.
Yeah, I mean, you're wasting valuable resources.
But at the time, you don't know that.
No.
Now, when they obtained the Facebook records, they learned all the strange messages had originated from Nicole. So on November 8th, Nicole Carver was charged with impersonating a detective. She finally told the truth and said she hadn't spoken to Charles Carver since August 29th. But she's never really given a full explanation for what she did for this strange behavior.
That's so bizarre. Why do it? Why would you want to cause the issues you caused? Why?
Lead detective Charlyn Ezell discovered Facebook messages between Kayla Brown and Todd Kohlhepp. She found communications about Kayla and Charles meeting Todd at his home in Moore, South Carolina, and Todd driving them to a property to work for the day. She found out that Todd owned a large wooded area in Woodruff. This was also the last area any outgoing communication was made from the couple. And finally, she discovered that Kayla was cheating on Charlie with Todd. They had an on-again, off-again relationship and really didn't maintain regular communication. So this seemed to be kind of more of a fling that happened from time to time. And it was around this time that Ezell received the tip that Kayla was buried on a 100-acre farm in Spartanburg. Anderson investigators searched the perimeter of the Woodruff property, and the Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office flew a helicopter over it. They prepared search warrants for Kohlhepp's cell phone records, and they processed his records on October 31st. From tracking his cell phone records, the police saw that he emailed his girlfriend, Holly Udy, on August 31st. He said he was exhausted from all the work he did on his Woodruff property. The email was timestamped 12:46 p.m. Investigators would later learn, Gibbs, that he sent this email about 16 minutes after Charlie Carver's estimated time of death.
Wow.
So he probably was exhausted, but as we're going to find out, it wasn't so much from doing work on the property as it was killing and covering up a murder.
Right.
On November 2nd, Anderson detectives met with the Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office. They felt that they had enough evidence to execute a search warrant on Kohlhepp's property. The Anderson detectives planned to go to his home and more, and the sheriff's office would go to his Woodruff property.
Divide and conquer.
Which I think is a good tactic. So on November 3rd, the police went to Todd's home in Moore, South Carolina, and he was outside to meet them before they even knocked on the door. The police told him they were there to ask questions about the missing couple, but they didn't inform him that at that very same moment, they were searching his property in Woodruff. So, I mean, I think to your point, divide and conquer for a very good reason. Hey, let's not tip him off. Let's do this at the same time. There's no way he can be in both places at the same time, and we'll catch him off guard.
Yeah.
Detective Ezell informed Todd that the couple's last cell phone activity pinged off a tower near his Woodruff property. He told the police that Kayla and Charles went to his Woodruff property to work a pruning and cleaning job on August 31st, but they left about an hour later because they said it was too hot. He described Kayla as unreliable, and it was reported, Gibbs, that he rambled a lot when he was asked questions, and pretty much all the time he tried to shift the focus of the conversation to his real estate business.
Yeah, let's steer him away from this conversation about missing people on my properties, and let's get back to real estate.
Smart tactic, also one used by a master manipulator.
Sure.
Someone who wants to dominate the conversation, who wants to shift it in the direction that where they want it to go.
Yeah, to benefit them.
Well, and probably has been pretty successful doing that most of their life. And now they're kind of in a life or death situation, so it becomes even more important.
Yeah, I mean, we know he's an intelligent guy, right? I mean, it's been stated that he was intelligent early on. He went out and got 2 degrees. And like you said, he's a master manipulator.
The police told him that they were going to search his house and car, but what they mainly wanted was his cell phone. And Todd told them that he would get it for them. They questioned him about his physical relationship with Kayla. He admitted that Kayla spent the night at his house after he took her to dinner. He'd paid her for sex. He told the investigators they met in 2010 or 2011. When a man she was dating introduced them at the strip club where she worked. So like we said, as this interview was going down, the Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office investigators were searching Todd Kohlhepp's property. The search was led by Detective Brad Whitfield. He noticed a cage that looked big enough to hold a human. Kohlhepp had a garage with a small apartment above it. They searched the apartment and they saw a pallet next to the bed with shackles hanging from the wall. In the trash can of the bathroom, they found freshly cut brown hair. When they made their way outside, they heard banging from inside a shipping container. And Gibbs, this container had 5 different padlocks. So why would you need 5 different padlocks? Either you have something so valuable inside there that you don't want someone breaking in, or
trying to keep somebody from getting out.
You're trying to keep somebody from getting out. And I think when you hear banging coming from the inside, well, it's going to be the latter.
Right.
The officers started hitting the locks with a sledgehammer, but they stopped when they heard a noise. A kitten ran out from under the container.
Yeah, but during that silence, it appeared a woman's voice calling for help.
And once they got inside, they found Kayla Brown. A few minutes later, the police found Charlie's car concealed in a ravine on the property. While on her way to the hospital, Kayla told the police everything she knew. She said when she and Charlie arrived at the property, she knocked on the garage door. As soon as the door opened, Todd Kohlhepp shot Charlie. He had set up the cleaning job, Gibbs, as a trap to kill Charlie and kidnap Kayla.
He knew exactly what he was going to do.
And he knew the perfect way to lure them out to the property. Kayla appeared on the Dr. Phil show in 2017, and she provided additional details about her time being kidnapped. She said that Kohlhepp was infatuated with her. He told her one day that she would care for him as well. She said, he let me know that I was his property and that I'd never go anywhere and that he chose me. He told Kayla that Stockholm syndrome would kick in soon and they'd be happy together. He promised to build a soundproof room for her to live in and said she could walk around the property freely once he trusted her. Kayla told Dr. Phil, I realized it was easier if he thought things were going his way. So I made him think whatever I had to.
Smart woman. Play into it instead of against it.
Well, I think it proved to be a very smart move, Gibbs. It's risky. I don't know if there's a playbook for these types of situations, but I do believe the last thing you want to do is upset this type of person to make them mad, to make them think that their plan is going to fail.
Yeah, because he doesn't have a problem killing right away.
No. And she already knew that. Like we said, Charlie was shot right off the bat. So she had to have been scared to such a degree. And she made the decision that she wasn't going to fight him. She was going to try to live. And ultimately it worked out.
I mean, during this whole time, she did look for ways to escape every day, but she just never had the right opportunity.
And the whole time, she feared that this guy would kill her if he caught her. She spent over 2 months chained up in the back of this shipping container. Kohlhepp arrived every day between 1 and 3 p.m. He unchained her neck and feet and led her at gunpoint to his garage. He gave her food, then pointed a gun at her as he raped her. He walked her back to the container at gunpoint. Kayla slept on 2 dog mattresses with a blanket and pillow. Gibbs, this was every day for over 2 months. Torturous. Now, he gave her books, a DVD player, and a battery-powered lantern. But he made it very clear to Kayla that she was only alive for his pleasure. And that doesn't surprise me at all. Go back to what mental health officials said about him at a young age.
Right.
Number one, it sounds like there was a sex addiction there, but most importantly, would likely attempt to force others to do what he wants in order to meet his own needs. That's exactly what he did.
Every day.
Every day for over 2 months. When police found her, they saw that Todd Kohlhepp had already dug a grave next to Charlie's body. So they knew, Gibbs, he was days away from killing her. Kayla told the police that Todd claimed to be part of a hunt club that tracks and kills people for sport. Apparently, he talked about trips to Juarez, Mexico. He later repeated these statements in a documentary interview. Investigators found that the trips may have been possible, but I don't think they were ever able to verify that claim. But Kayla had more information. She told the police there were other bodies on the property. Todd talked to her about other victims and claimed to be near the 3-digit mark. So he's telling her, I've killed nearly 100 people.
That ought to scare you.
You mean on top of being held captive in a shipping container and raped daily for over 2 months? Yeah. I mean, the imagery of what this woman went through over that 2 month period is sickening. How scared she must have been. The emotional, the physical abuse that she went through, it's heartbreaking. But the fact that she was able to make it out of alive is absolutely amazing. Not only make it out alive, but to be able to tell police all this information that is ultimately going to catch him.
Yeah, it says a lot about her.
She must be extremely tough. You know, springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. Springtime also means more time outside and away from home. And I trust Simply Safe. I love the myriad of features that they offer. And I love the price. Simply Safe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News and World Report. The system blankets your whole home in protection. There are so many sensors, from detecting break-ins, fires, floods, and more. Plus, they have a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. So you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. There's no contract, and they have a 60-day money-back guarantee. So you can try Simply Safe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. Simply Safe has given Gibby and I and many of our listeners real peace of mind. We want you to have it too. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/TCAT. That's simplysafe.com/TCATT. There's no safe like Simply Safe. True Crime All the Time is sponsored by BetterHelp. I want to ask everybody one question. How is your social battery right now? Does it have a ton of energy or are you drained? And why is it at that level? You know, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? You know, maybe you're the type of person who thrives around people or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I think therapy is a very powerful tool for learning positive coping skills and helping to empower you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. No more hopping in the car, driving, and sitting in a waiting room. You can do your entire session from the comfort of your own home. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TCAT today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/TCATT. As soon as Detective Ezell and her team got the news, they arrested Todd Kohlhepp. He asked why they were putting him in handcuffs. And one detective told him, "We have Kayla." Now you would think those three words would have buckled him.
Yeah.
Knowing the state that he had left her in, knowing everything that she knew about him. But Todd denied everything and he just asked for his attorney.
Don't know what you're talking about. Didn't have nothing to do with it. Hey, by the way, let's call my attorney.
On November 4th, the police brought digging equipment to look for bodies. Todd exchanged some information about the location of the bodies for a visit with his mother and permission to put some of his money towards Holly Udy's daughter's college education. So he wasn't admitting anything off the bat, but now he's making deals. Todd was escorted to the property and he led police straight to a body. They started digging at 10 a.m. and found a body pretty shortly after that. The body was identified as Charles Carver. Kohlhepp was escorted back to prison for an interview before the digging even started. And I think pretty quickly, Gibbs, he confessed to killing Charlie Carver. I mean, you just led the police to his body. I mean, what else are you going to do?
Right.
When asked why he shot Charlie, he said, "You know what? I wasn't mad at him. I was mad at her. I don't know how that all developed. It just went very quickly." When they told him that they recovered a body, he said, "Well, that's not the only one."
Well, we knew he had a temper. So I'm not surprised that when that day went down, he just shot Charlie just because that's what he wanted to do at that moment. He seemed like that type of person from his past. He was very spontaneous, explosive.
Quick to anger.
Yeah.
Yeah, to me, the old phrase, shoot first and ask questions later, comes to mind with Todd Kohlhepp.
But if you're the investigator and he's like, that's not the only one, you're probably like, oh boy. I probably say, oh boy. He probably said, oh shit.
Yeah. Well, couple that with the fact that Kayla said he told her his body count was nearing three digits.
Yeah.
So you have to be wondering not only, okay, are there more bodies? How many more?
Yeah.
Are we going to find 90 some bodies?
Maybe that's why he needed a 95 acre piece of property.
You can bury a lot of bodies on a 95-acre piece of property. At 8:30 p.m. on November 4th, an investigator received a call from Todd's mother, who said that Todd called her from jail. When she asked him if there were more bodies, he responded, more than you can count on two hands.
Something a mom wants to hear.
Yeah. Well, it's not really nearing the three-digit mark, but, you know, obviously, that would mean it was more than 10. That would still be a very large number. His mom told them about Todd's rape charge in Arizona. He lived with her for a year after he got out of prison as he was trying to get his life back on track. Then he became angry and he purchased a motorcycle. Eventually, Gibbs, she said she didn't want to waste the detective's time, but that they should look into his connection with the Superbike murders, which at the time was an unsolved case. She said that after the Superbike shooting, Todd was acting nervous and said he would never ride his bike by the shop again. So investigators questioned him about it. And on November 5th, 2016, Todd Kohlhepp confessed to the Superbike murders, an unsolved case that had haunted South Carolina police for 13 years. Todd was questioned by investigators Tom Clark and Mark Gaddy of the Sheriff's Office Violent Crimes Unit. But before he was even willing to talk about the Superbike murders, Todd confessed to killing a married couple from Spartanburg, Johnny and Megan Coxey.
Well, he's just letting it all out.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think? At this point, is his thought, what else do I have to lose? I might as well just tell him everything. Because that seems to be what he's doing.
Yeah.
Johnny and Megan were reported missing on December 22nd, 2015. Shortly after they were released from jail, Johnny was arrested on December 10th and charged with unauthorized solicitation and giving false information to the police. Megan was arrested on December 18th for child neglect. She asked her mother to bond her out of jail because she had a job lined up, a job with Todd Kohlhepp. Apparently, Kohlhepp saw Megan panhandling one day, and he felt bad for her, which, to be honest with you, I find that hard to believe. Knowing what this guy had going on inside of him, he might have said that to investigators, but I don't think this was a guy who felt bad for anyone.
No.
Or anything he did to anyone.
It was all about him.
Yeah, he offered her and her husband, Johnny, a job cleaning houses for his real estate agency. They went to his Woodruff property to get cleaning supplies. And according to Todd, everything was going okay until Johnny pulled out a knife and tried to rob him. Todd told the investigators, he came at me and I put two in his chest. Now, this is according to Todd Kohlhepp. So you have to take this version of events in that light because he didn't kill Megan immediately. He chained her and left her in the garage while he buried Johnny. He cleared out the shipping container and he left Megan there for 5 or 6 days.
Sounds familiar?
Sounds very familiar. He agreed to take her to Tennessee and give her $4,000 so that she could start a new life, if you believe him. But he got angry at Megan because she kept burning things with the cigarettes he bought her. The container was full of smoke and Megan broke a fan. So he walked her out and shot her in the head. He buried her near Johnny. After 2 hours, Detective Clark hinted that he'd always been curious about the Superbike case. He worked the initial investigation and he always wondered what happened. Todd said he bought a bike from Superbike, but he couldn't ride it. And the manager made fun of him when he tried to trade it in.
Always be careful who you make fun of.
Yeah, and there are actually videos out there where you can hear him talking about this in police interviews. This was just such a long episode that I didn't want to really put too much of it in. I guess Todd changed the subject and said that he wished he could help Detective Wright, the second detective, get elected as sheriff. So Detective Clark jumped in and he said, "You want to help the sheriff? Just answer me one question. Did you do Superbikes?" And Todd said, yes, he confessed to committing the Superbike murders.
Finally admitted it.
On November 6, 2003, a customer found four bodies inside Superbike Motorsports in Spartanburg County, South Carolina. I mentioned it, Gibbs. 13 years went by. Police could never figure out who did it. What happened was Todd Kohlhepp walked into the Superbike store and shot the owner, Scott Ponder, his mother, Beverly Guy, and two employees, Brian Lucas and Chris Sherbert. Each had multiple gunshot wounds, including one in the head.
Four murders that quick.
And this was a case that drew heavy criticism against the Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office for how they investigated it. Famed FBI profiler John Douglas also investigated the murders. One theory was that an angry customer lashed out. Another theory involved a drug cartel. Brian Lucas's parents hired a friend to investigate. This friend gathered a list of customers, one of whom was Todd Kohlhepp, and he was highlighted because of his criminal record. But family members said law enforcement never took them seriously.
Yeah, you would think if you have one of the theories that it could be an angry customer, and then you have this list, and certain names are highlighted because they have a criminal record, you would think, at the very least, you'd want to check them out.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why family members were upset. In 2013, the sheriff's office sent out a letter to a list of customers. Kohlhepp was one of the recipients, but he never responded, and no one followed up with him.
And that's the problem. It doesn't do any good if you're not going to follow up on it.
Well, what good is a letter going to do to the person who committed the murders?
Yeah.
Hey, we're looking for information regarding the Superbike murders. I don't know exactly what the letter said. If you're the murderer, you're shredding that right away.
Exactly.
That's going in the trash. You're not going to respond. Hey, maybe you should put together a list of the people who didn't respond.
Exactly.
And check them out.
You're not going to get that phone call. Hey, I got your letter. You got me. It's me. That was really good, detectives.
But I think you can see why there was quite a bit of criticism against the Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office. Todd gave more details in his confession. He said that on April 16th, 2003, he paid $9,000 for a Suzuki motorcycle at Superbike Motorsports. He reported it stolen 13 days later and told his neighbors he thought the bike shop was involved in the theft. Kohlhepp told investigator Tom Clark, "I was inexperienced and I thought it was a bad decision. Maybe I wanted to trade it for a 600 motorcycle." But I guess, Gibbs, they were rude to him and they were trying to tell him how to ride a bike. They dropped it off at his apartment. So in his mind, they knew where it was stored. And then 2 to 3 days later, it was stolen. He said he made a police report. The insurance came out. He lost $1,000 because he had to pay his deductible, but he wanted another bike. So he went back to the same store. And when he got there, he made implications that an employee of the store was involved in the bike theft.
Probably not going to sell you another bike if you're accusing me of something.
Well, they're not going to be real happy about it. They might sell you one, but they're not going to be happy. He told investigators, "I let it slide for the time being. Then I got mad about it. I kept going out there, sitting on the bikes, and listening to the owner and the manager basically talk trash. I bought a Beretta 92S 9mm. I had 3 10-round magazines. I didn't want to shoot other customers. One of the guys wasn't there. I had to wait for him to come in. It was either the owner or the manager, one of the two main people. Finally, all four showed up who worked there with the mechanic and the mom. He said the mom was not a primary target. I was sitting on a black Kawasaki Katana 600. I told them I would take it, and the mechanic took the bike back to get it ready. When all the customers left, Todd walked to the back of the shop. He shot twice at Chris Sherbert, then went to the front and shot Beverly Guy, Brian Lucas, and Scott Ponder. He walked around the building and shot each person in the head just in case. And then he left in his car. He took his gun apart and put one part in cat litter and threw it in a dumpster at his apartment.
Well, he definitely planned that out.
He did. And it is very interesting if you want to listen to the entire interview. First of all, he's a very smug guy. It's almost as if he's trying to impress these police officers, these investigators. I think at one point he said that they would have been proud of him the way that he did certain things. You can just tell he was a very strange guy.
Full of himself.
Yeah, that, and just, you know, arrogant, like trying to show off almost. But after 13 years, the Superbike murder case was finally solved. Then on November 6, 2016, police found another body. Todd appeared in court the same day and was charged with the four Superbike murders. On the 7th, the police found a third body. These two bodies were confirmed to be Johnny and Megan Coxey. The bodies matched Todd's confession. Johnny was shot in the torso, and Megan was shot in the head. The coroner estimated they died in December of 2015. The police also found severed feet in separate graves on the property. The feet were identified as belonging to Johnny and Megan. Cole Hepp was interviewed by the police later that day. As you can imagine, they're going to have some questions. I think, you know, first and foremost, they asked him about the feet. And Gibbs, he told them he had no idea why Johnny and Megan's feet were removed.
This was a very bizarre statement for him.
Well, and it got even more bizarre because Tom Clark told the Greenville News that Todd made the comment, "My mother told me never to play with my food."
Okay.
So to me, he's saying, "I'm the predator. They were my prey. They were my food. My mother told me never to play with my food. So I just killed them. I didn't mess around."
Yeah,
that's the way that I'm taking that.
Well, if he didn't do it, who did it then?
It's a good question. One that I still don't think anyone knows the answer to. Todd Kohlhepp was sentenced to life in prison on May 26, 2017, after pleading guilty to 7 counts of murder. He received 7 consecutive life sentences, plus 60 years for kidnapping and sexual assault. So this is a man that's never getting out. Right. I think that's safe to say.
Yeah, I think so too.
Barring something incredible, miraculous, there's just no way he's ever getting out. The judge conferred with the families of the victims in March of 2017 before electing to accept guilty pleas for 7 murders, 4 weapon charges, 2 kidnappings, and 1 criminal sexual conduct charge. From what I understand, Gibbs, the families agreed because they wanted everything to be over quickly. And this is something that we hear in a lot of cases. We talked about it in our Patreon episode.
Yeah, they don't want to relive this.
Yeah, there are families that don't want to go through a drawn-out extended trial. I completely understand that. When you think about what's going to come out at trial, the details, you're going to have to sit and listen to some very horrifying things that happen to your loved ones. There's also the chance that this man's going to take the stand and you're going to have to listen to him bloviate for who knows how many days and say disparaging things. And, you know, I get it why people would not want to do that. And knowing that he's never going to get out, what's the downside?
Yeah. He's where he needs to be.
Yeah. In July, 2018, Kayla Brown filed a personal injury lawsuit against Todd Kohlhepp's estate. She sought $360 million. On August 23rd of that year, she won $6.3 million in her personal injury lawsuit against Kohlhepp. She also received the $25,000 reward for information on the Superbike case. Now, will she ever see all that much of that $6.3 million? A damages hearing for the Superbike families is still pending. There are a number of ongoing civil suits against Kohlhepp right now. There's a foreclosure lawsuit regarding his Woodruff property, Charlie Carver's wrongful death suit, and Johnny Cox's wrongful death lawsuit.
I think everybody's going after him, and they should.
Yeah, they definitely should. My question is, how much is anybody actually going to see? How much of that $6.3 million is Kayla Brown ever going to see? When you factor in all these different lawsuits, we don't even know how much money he had. Kohlhepp appeared in court in 2019 for all of the hearings at once. He didn't speak during the foreclosure hearing, but he did speak during Johnny's hearing. He took to the witness stand to explain that Johnny tried to rob him. He told the judge, why so much money for one, and two, he was shot trying to rob me, in which I killed him. So it doesn't sound like he ever changed off of that explanation of why he killed Johnny.
Just stuck with it.
He stuck with it. It's just kind of hard to square when he then kind of held Megan hostage and then couple that with the way that he held Kayla hostage after killing Charlie. You put all that together and it's really hard for me to kind of buy that explanation. Now, I asked the question, how are these people going to see any money? The one way that they could is from any profits that Kohlhepp would receive from appearances in TV shows or book sales, any of that money. None of that money would ever go to him. It would all go to the victims' families and Kayla Brown.
That's the way it should be.
Absolutely. It's been that way for quite a while now. And, as you said, it's the way it should be. No criminal should ever profit from their crime. It just should never happen. I mentioned this, Gibbs, the Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office has been heavily criticized over the years for their investigation into some of these murders. Now, they've said that they did everything that they could do to investigate the Coxie murders.
And we know the sheriff was criticized for not investigating Kohlhepp in the Superbike case, too.
Yeah, the sheriff claimed that at the time, there just was no evidence he was involved. Well, I think that's pretty easy to say. I think the question is, would there have been evidence uncovered if there would have been more investigation?
That's a good point.
In 2019, Todd Kohlhepp interviewed with investigative journalist Maria Oz for the show Devil Unchained. He claimed more victims and told Oz the body count is not even close to accurate. He claimed two more victims before the Superbike murders. He said he killed them in 2003 while living at the Hunt Club Apartments in Spartanburg County, where he lived after getting out of prison in Arizona. He claimed that other residents harassed him because he was a sex offender. He told local law enforcement about residents leaving flyers at his door, calling him and harassing him. According to him, the police told him to just deal with it. But Todd said he decided to take matters into his own hands. Two men tried to assault him. One had a knife, the other a hammer. And Todd said he felt he had no choice but to stab one in the chest and the other in the neck. He dumped the bodies at a dead-end road off I-26 between Spartanburg and Columbia. Kohlhepp, the Devil Unchained film crew, and law enforcement were present for a search of that area. The police found some animal bones, but no human remains. Todd also said he continued killing people from 2003 to 2015. He wrote to the Spartanburg Herald Journal to say he tried to tell police and the FBI about additional victims, but his tips were, quote, blown off.
So did they not believe him?
I'm assuming they did not believe him. Now, that could have been based on the fact that his other claims didn't pan out, right? There was no evidence to support them. Maybe they checked on a couple and there was no evidence to support them. I don't know. It's also very common, right, for these killers to just say, yeah, I've killed a bunch of people.
Right.
You know, their egos get the best of them. I think some want to remain relevant because after a while they fade away from public view. So if you come out and say, hey, I'm now announcing additional victims, does that put you back in the spotlight? Yeah, a lot of times it does.
Yeah, it gets you that people focusing on you again, asking questions.
But at a certain point, if you can't provide proof, if you can't lead investigators to more bodies, they're going to start to not believe you. Todd Kohlhepp is now 50 years old. And like we said, Gibbs, I don't think there's any doubt. He will spend the rest of his life in prison. He's going to die there. He concluded his interview with Marie Oz by saying that he'd be willing to offer up more details if the Attorney General's office would waive some of his additional charges.
Well, maybe the way to go about that is actually give them something solid first, so they know that you are sincere.
Truthful.
Truthful, right?
Yes. And then maybe they would be willing to waive certain things.
Yeah.
You're still never getting out of prison, so I'm sure there are some things that they could waive. They're not going to waive things to the point where there's a chance you're going to get out. Right.
That's never going to happen.
But they would do some things if they could help solve some unsolved murders and give the family of some victims closure. I think they would do that.
Sure.
So in wrapping up, you know, Todd Kohlhepp, just kind of a monster of a guy. What surprised me, I think, the most about him was that I think he was a little monstrous from a very young age. The signs were there. Now, did those signs necessarily point to the fact that he was going to grow up to be a killer? No, I would say no. But obviously, you know, you were dealing with someone, even at the tender age of 9, with, number one, a sex addiction.
Sure.
And number two, very little to no empathy, and who was really willing to do whatever he had to do to get what he wanted.
Yeah, major anger.
And those are very scary combinations. We got some voicemails, Gibbs. You want to check those out?
Let's hear them.
Hey, guys. This is Brad calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Just finished listening to the D.D. Moore episode. I started from episode 1 back in March of this year. Finally got caught up, so I don't really know what I'm going to do with my free time now. Listen to a lot of true crime podcasts like most of the listeners. Was turned on to you guys by another podcast that I listened to start to finish. And really enjoyed you guys. I think you're my favorite that I've listened to. Appreciate all that you guys do. Stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
Wow, appreciate that. It really means a lot to us.
It does.
To hear those kind of kind words.
Well, jump over to Unsolved if you haven't done that yet.
Yeah, if you got a little bit of extra time on your hands, check out Unsolved.
Hey, Mike and Gibby, this is Jay from Marysville, Ohio, not far from you. I just got done listening to Van, and I wanted to let you know that Steve McQueen did not die from racing. He died of stomach cancer. Just wanted to let you know that. And on the thought of the serial killers being in jail for life, I think that they don't think about what they've done. So I believe the ones that are truly evil and the ones who don't care what they've done should be put to death. That's just my thoughts. And thank you for all you do. And thank you for your true crime all the time. I'm going to start listening to The Unsolved. I'm about halfway through the true crime. Thank you for your time and keep your own time ticket.
So I do remember that conversation. And I know we looked it up after the episode.
We did.
And we figured out that the person I was talking about was James Dean.
Yes.
And it wasn't in a car race, but he died driving a car too fast or whatever. Yeah, I get my people mixed up. You get your folks mixed up.
I don't ever get anything mixed up.
No, you're pretty much spot on.
Yeah.
You know, 60% of the time, you're right all the time.
Hey, Mike. I can give you. I'm Katie Stewart, and I think I got a really interesting case for you guys to look at. It's a case of Lori Valo Daybell, and this one's wild. She and her husband went and killed her children because they thought they were zombies for some weird reason. And then they went to Hawaii for a week to get married. There is a bunch of odd religious stuff that I don't even understand. I thought you guys would love to dig into this one. She was just sentenced not too long ago. This happened in 2018. So thanks for doing what you do, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, that's a really big case.
It is. And it's definitely one that we will do sometime in the future. All right, Gibbs, we had mailbag. Kibian sent in some challenge coins. One's a very cool limited edition Punisher one.
Yeah, you love the Punisher.
And you know how much I love the Punisher. Megan Hunt sent in some Harley chips. She also sent in a fiver for you to buy whatever candy that you would like.
It's in my pocket right now.
It was the first thing you grabbed when you got into the studio. Ooh, money.
Yeah.
Kim Hester sent us a bunch of amazingly decorated Tea Cat and Halloween cookies. She just did a fantastic job.
Delicious.
So, yeah, thank you to everyone who sent something in. All right, buddy, that is it for another episode of True Crime All the Time. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking. I want to tell everybody about a game that I've been playing recently called Two Dots. You know, primarily Two Dots is a puzzle-based game. You have to connect at least two dots of the same color to make a move. And then those connected dots are removed from the game area, and the dots above them drop down until they hit other dots or the floor beneath. But there's a variety of game modes. There's this really cool one called Scavenger Hunt, which is a really relaxing hidden object game. There's different levels to the game that are grouped into worlds, and it's very satisfying to move up. There's over 5,000 unique puzzles and fun levels, and with all the different gameplay modes, it really makes the gaming experience unique and exciting with every single puzzle. The visuals are amazing, and the in-game music I found to be very soothing. You can even challenge your friends on Facebook to make it competitive, link up, and see how your dot skills match up. And best of all, it's free to download, and you don't need Wi-Fi to play it. You can play it offline as well. Think you have what it takes to solve some fun puzzles? Download Two Dots now for free on Android or iOS.